Well, it would have been a normal farming week. We were calving at the time, tagging calves and checking cows and that kind of thing. And I would have gone out as normal, just, you know, would have gone out around 8 o'clock. All the cattle would have been in the sheds, would have been feeding and bedding and scraping and that kind of thing. Normal kind of stuff. So I would have gone out in the morning to check the cows and see how they were doing and whether any more calves had been born the night before.
That morning when you were coming out here to the sheds where we are now, I mean, you have no memory of this. This is in some ways all conjecture, isn't it?
Yeah, because I was on my own, I have no real clue of what actually happened as such. I would have gone out and there would have been a calf and I would have looked at the calf and just to see whether it was a heifer or a bull, probably. There would have been a few of them had calves already.
So you were doing your morning check just to see who had calved and who hadn't and if they were okay?
Yeah, that was all really. As far as I know, a couple of cows had calved the night before. The calves would have been up and sucking off the cow at that stage, probably. What we presume has happened is that I would have been maybe looking at a calf and the cow didn't like it, decided to push me away. But the problem is, what we think happened is she pushed me into a wall. It resulted in my fracturing my skull on the wall. I can only guess. I must have blanked out at that stage. I don't know how long I was out for. I had obviously woken up and managed to get back to the house, because when they went out to the shed later, they found blood on the walls and on that kind of thing. So I had managed to get back to the house, and Ali had come downstairs and found me sort of collapsed in the study.
What's remarkable is that, as you say, you have no memory, you know, as far as a week back from the accident, but that you managed somehow, after being injured by the cow, to presumably crawl your way back.
Yeah, I have no idea
to the house.
What happened?
It is utterly incredible that you were able to find your way back to the house.
Yeah, I don't know how I managed. I mean, I was so lucky that I did, because if I hadn't managed to get back to the house, they wouldn't have found me till later on that day. Chances are I wouldn't have made it. Somehow anyway, I managed to get back out through the neck rails and back to the house. I don't really know what state I was in, but I must have been, apparently I was vomiting blood, and they found, because I'd made my way back to the bathroom in the house, where apparently there was blood everywhere, before I went into the little sitting room and just collapsed on the sofa. There's a corridor kind of going to the front of the house, out of the kitchen, and I would have managed to get down into the bathroom, which is on the
bathroom to the left here, yes.
So there would have been apparently blood all over around the toilet and in the bathroom. So I don't know how long I was in there, but then I obviously managed to get into this little sitting room here,
which is opposite the bathroom. And this is where your wife, Alison, comes in. Alison, just describe what you saw when you came back that day.
We came downstairs. It was early in the morning. I was bringing my baby and my little girl down to get ready for school. And as far as we knew, Dominic was outside. And I came past the study door and looked in, and there was Dominic on the floor with one hand over his hand and blood. You just see his eyelids kind of flickered, but that was it. My poor daughter, who's 6, because I was holding the baby as well, unfortunately thought her father was dead and ran away screaming, but there was nothing I could do, which was quite upsetting. So I could hear her up in the rest of the house crying, but I couldn't go after her. So I called for an ambulance, and of course their first question is, what happened to him? And I had no idea. What was most obvious was the back of his head. It was open, slightly open, and there was blood gushing out, basically. He was very cold to touch.
How quickly did the paramedics arrive?
What helped Dominic survive that day was the fact that everything actually happened very quickly for him. The ambulance arrived promptly from Portlaoise. He became conscious enough while they were here to start throwing up more blood. He couldn't respond to anyone as such. All he could do was hold his head and go, my head, my head, my head. So that was making their job a bit difficult.
And as awful as that sounds, it must have been quite relieving to you that he was at least
conscious. It was that he kind of come back a bit. And actually a neighbour had come down. I'd rang them because of where we are, like a lot of people in country lanes in Ireland. A bit concerned the ambulance wouldn't find our gate. So I actually rang the neighbour and got him to stand at our gate to make sure they came down the right gate. And he came down, so he saw Dominic as well and was here when the ambulance arrived, which was helpful. By the time I got to Portlaoise, he was already sedated and paralysed and in a scanner. The scans were then emailed off to Beaumont Hospital. 5 minutes later, he's up to Beaumont now. They want to do emergency surgery. He actually went up in an ambulance with... I couldn't go because the ambulance was full because he was so serious. So I actually then came home, packed the kids up and went up to the hospital.
Alison, through all this hell that you're going through, and it's unbelievable to think at that time you had a young child to deal with as well, was it still a complete mystery to you what happened to him, or did it start to make sense? Did you start to guess what happened?
Yes. By the time we left here, the guards had turned up as well. The neighbour and the guard went off to have a look. And what we found was, I hadn't even noticed the blood in the bathroom, and it was quite bad at that stage because I'd been concentrating on Dominic. But we discovered the bathroom, and we discovered as he came in the door, near the front back door, he'd obviously leant on the wall. There was a handprint, and there was just muck from his back. He'd obviously been sliding along the wall. He couldn't stand straight or anything. So he'd obviously come in the back door. So they went off to the shed. At that point, they found his hat. They found blood on the wall. So they made a pretty good educated guess. They could see on the wall where they think he was pushed into the wall in the shed. And I knew that he'd gone out to the carving shed first thing that morning. So it became pretty obvious this is what had happened.
And Dominic, sitting here listening to Alison talk about this part of your life that you don't remember, that really is just a story to you.
It's funny because every time that Ali talks about it, do you know, there's a little bit extra, or there's might be a little bit extra detail. So every time it's kind of a bit new in some ways, that I wonder how Ali got through it whenever I hear it. And it's kind of so hard to imagine it.
So the operation happened in Beaumont, and what then was the outcome of the operation, and what did the doctors tell you had happened to him in terms of physically his head?
When I got up there, he was in what they call an induced coma. The important part for him was the fact that he had a very large, serious hematoma, bleeding a huge amount, and it was causing pressure on his brain. It was literally compressing his brain the wrong way.
So it's a little bit like filling up a balloon constantly.
Yeah.
The problem is
because the skull and where the skull sits is a closed system. So once there's pressure in there, it compresses your brain, and it was causing damage.
How long was he in a coma for?
He was in an induced coma for around 2 weeks. Unfortunately, he went downhill. He got an infection in his brain. And so he actually went back into his own little self-made coma because he wasn't ready to come out. He didn't start really coming out of his own coma for a good another 2 weeks after that.
And Alison, during this time, animals still need to be fed. Mm-hmm. The farm still takes on, and they're very unforgiving in that way. Mm-hmm. Who did it? The next day, that day when it happened?
I was so lucky. That day, I went up. The neighbours and the guy who'd been working casually for us basically came in, and we had crops due to be planted and things. The contractor knew what had happened, so he still came in and planted the crop. I came back Sunday night and had a round table with Dominic's uncle and with Mick, who subsequently I ended up employing him full-time. I got him through farm relief initially. We've got animals here. You can't leave them. They have to be fed. They have to be fed and looked after. There was things to be done because we were calving. We were lambing. There was crops going in. A wonderful group of women at playgroup and stuff who started appearing with casseroles and food. My mother flew over from Australia. The neighbours would come and check. A couple of the neighbours and a couple of his farming friends would just occasionally just drive in and walk around and check everything was okay for me.
To be honest, up till then, Ali really wouldn't have had a huge amount to do with the farm. And then suddenly she was landed in the deep end and basically had to manage a farm and mind the kids and run the house and all that sort of stuff and come up and see me on a regular basis.
How long was he in rehab for?
Actually, amazingly briefly, not very long.
Just 5 weeks. Suddenly I began to get stamina and a bit of strength back while I was up there.
Is there any good to what has happened for both of you?
Decisions on the farm, especially at the moment, are more equal.
Yeah, that is true, because you have much more of a, as you say, awareness now of what's going on the farm and what we do at different times, and more management decisions that we can share now.
With regards to farm safety, has it made you think more about what you're going to do in the future, not only around calving time, but in what is a dangerous occupation in anyone's mind?
It's going to take a long time for me to get over the sharp worry. Like, if he hasn't come back, say he's gone, he said, right, I'm going to go do this, and say he hasn't come back in an hour, then it's like, okay, I need to go look for him now.
Yeah. And what's the solution to that going to be in the long term?
Well, I've pretty much told him, he hasn't accepted yet, that he's not to go into the carving shed by himself.
Yeah, no, I think we will do something like that,
Some sort of basic preventative measure.
Do you know, say, especially around things like calving time, which is especially risky, be a question of having someone around when I go out and check the cows, and or bringing someone with me to go and check the cows.